The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
You're listening to America Speaks Out on the FlyPod.com media network. From Studio 7, I'm your host, Alex Parnuk. Regardless of how you're listening, we're glad to have you joining us. When you have a few minutes, take time to browse around on our media website, www.theflypod.com. We have a nationwide network of show hosts, and we podcast a wide variety of programs daily to thousands of small communities across the United States, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. When it comes to media, we are what's next. My guest today is Alan McIntyre. He is a successful business owner and a patriot active in the Tea Party movement. Alan, welcome to America Speaks Out.
Thank you.
Alan, if one listens to the media today and the pundits, your presence at a Tea Party event should be a non-starter, and yet there you were. For our listeners, Alan was first encountered at a local Tea Party rally. From that event came an invitation to join us on America Speaks Out. Alan, how about a quick bio about yourself and how you got involved with the Tea Party movement?
Well, very quickly, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm also an African-American. I own a company called LifeCard, and I'm also involved with a company called Advanced Credit Help. I am currently working on a book that is kind of a response to Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. It's not yet titled, but I'm kind of calling it Rules for Conservatives. And basically, it's teaching conservatives how to respond to liberals in public and how to respond to the liberal argument.
I like that, Rules for Conservatives. That's one of these things that, you know, it's important for the conservatives to speak up more, I believe, in these times that are testing our mettle, so to speak. But in a way, could you be a little bit more specific? I mean, the Tea Party, if you look at it, and when you saw it on television, when they were broadcasting, it really did look predominantly white. And yet, when you looked at the party, if you started looking beyond what you saw on the pictures, you saw, hey, there was a black fellow there was an Asian there was a Hispanic there. Personally, how did you get, was it the fact that you were conservative in your lifestyle and activities that brought you to Tea Party, or did somebody invite you? How was it that you actually got mixed up with this bunch?
I'm going to kind of bounce around here, but initially I'm attracted to the message. That is the conservative message. I first encountered and began to hear about the Tea Party literally in 2006. And I tell people that all the time, and that's long before most people even knew that Obama was on the scene. So I typically refer to that when I'm letting people know that this isn't a response to Obama and him being black, as many black people like to say when they want to associate the Tea Party with being racist, which we're not. Or for myself, I'm referred to as an Uncle Tom because I'm a Tea Party member. And there's some other colorful names that I'm called within the black community.
Gee,
unfortunately,
Uncle Tom is kind of neat, you know. I think that actually that should be almost like a medal for black people today.
But I tell you, the Tea Party, I'm very upset because the Tea Party is misrepresented by the liberal media today. And we're painted as being racist, and we're not racist. But what we are wanting to do is we are upholding traditional American values. And particularly, I think that we're putting the message out that we prefer a small government. And we're upset with the current tax system and how we are overtaxed. And typically what happens is the Democrats will play a particular type of politics, and they like to play identity politics, where they want to distinguish certain groups, and then they want to do certain favors for certain groups. And when you do that, I think you create a hostile environment. And, you know, if you do this for one group, then you have to do something for another group. What they're doing is they're actually dividing the country. What we say as conservatives, as Tea Party people, we say, look, we have one agenda. It's an American agenda. We don't have an agenda for Hispanics. We don't have an agenda for homosexuals. We don't have an agenda for blacks. We have an American agenda, and everybody is welcome under that agenda.
Well, I wish you well, I especially in that Rules for Conservatives. I think we really do need some kind of a common effort with respect to how we handle certain situations and how we handle when the media comes upon us and tells us right away that, you know, we're these really almost demonic types of people.
Yes.
Let's change this around a little bit. You know, Alan, it's common knowledge that the unemployment rate, especially among blacks, is significantly higher than whites, Latinos, even Asians. We have had 3.5 years of a black Democratic president and a Democratic Congress, at least in the first 2 years. When blacks talk about unemployment, when they're just sitting around, say, having a cold one, how do they handle this problem of inequity, even though by all rights, under the Obama administration and the Democratic Party, they should be faring so much better?
Well, they're going to blame Bush, unfortunately. And a new one that I heard is the problem is what Bush created is so terrible that even Obama, as brilliant as they believe him to be, can't solve it. Because what has happened is some black people are realizing that, you know, Obama isn't everything he was cracked up to be. We knew that from the beginning. And I think what you're starting to see in the black community is some of the black people are beginning to turn away from Obama and the Democrat Party, which I consider to be basically the Democrats have put all black people on a plantation. That's where I see things going. And on that plantation, they tell blacks, they say, well, we're going to give you quotas and we're going to develop programs. We're going to give you this and we're going to give you that. And black people buy into it. And as a result, I think we become complacent. We begin to expect things as opposed to getting out here and being assertive and doing things for ourselves. We expect the government, we expect the Democrat Party to give it to us. And that's caused black society to decay, if you will.
Well, this decay is a bit well documented in many books.
Yes,
it's kind of a sad commentary on our times, especially, you know, you sort of brought it up, black poverty. The war on poverty, you know, has been in effect for 48 years, the official war on poverty, let's put it that way, since the passage of the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964. This is that one that everybody talks to and refers to as the poverty, war on poverty. Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was the president at the time when this was passed, in a message to Congress on March 16, 1963, he specifically stated that this legislation would, and these are in his words, strike at the causes, not the consequences of poverty. And we still have poverty at this time. We have the consequences of that poverty, and blacks continue to support a party, the Democratic Party, that has spent trillions of dollars on trying to solve this problem, but it's not been solved.
It's not a money problem.
Well, if it's not a money problem, how do we get at it? I mean, the Democrats and the government of the United States, I'm a taxpayer, we've pumped in thousands, you know, just billions. Actually, it's close to $1 trillion, and yet we've not solved this problem. I mean, I as a taxpayer sit back and says, well, how can I help? How can I do it? What are they doing wrong? What are they doing that has caused this mess that we're in?
Well, it's actually a values problem. That is what I would call it. And I think that the black family, the black community is losing its values. One value that traditionally the black community had was the black community had a strong work ethic at one time. But in today's society, when you look at everybody that's fast money, if you look at Hollywood and you look into the entertainment industry, rap artists, you know, people believe they can get the money quickly. And that's glorified and that's perpetuated that way. And actually, you know, they're not in touch with reality. People need to understand that there's no quick fix. And you definitely can't sit around and expect the government to take care of you. And what we need to do, we need to get back to a work ethic within the black community. And when the black community does have a strong work ethic, it succeeds.
You know, just in line with that, you know, I guess I consider myself lucky. When I was younger, I did some traveling, and I went down south. I was in Georgia working in a few places in Mississippi, and I worked. I was a laborer. That's all I was. And I got to work with a black fella that was an older gentleman. And I tell you what, he just worked me to death. I mean, he had all of the work ethic that you could possibly imagine. And this is not that long ago. This was in the 60s. And all of a sudden, here we understand, you know, how is it that this occurred? I mean, how has the black community been able to be manipulated, not just by the media, but also by leadership, by its own leadership, into turning around from a say, on the work ethic, one on the one hand, and on the other hand, the social problems that they have with respect to family structure, how have they been able to be manipulated by the media and also by their very own leadership structure? And by that, we see, you know, those people that up to this point in history, the Wrangles, the Jacksons, have gotten themselves in positions where, as a white person sitting on the outside, we perceive these as leadership people in the black community. How did this happen?
Well, first of all, that's a false perception. You shouldn't even perceive that. Second of all, the problem in the black community is that they look for and to leadership. The leadership needs to take place within the home from the mother and the father. I'm tired of us looking outwardly for one or two national figures to be considered our leaders. And second of all, as far as the work ethic, it's very easy for someone to lose their work ethic if they're always expecting to be given something.
So you're talking about our entitlement program where we've destroyed the black family by not allowing to have a man in the household, because if you have a man in the household, you don't get the check.
Benefits.
Yeah,
exactly.
You don't get the check. So how do we change that psyche? How do we change that psyche of people turning around and saying, look, we want strong people? I mean, you and I talked earlier, and I told you that I came from my last place that I lived was Chicago. And if you drive around Chicago, man, there's black churches. You can't drive a block without a black church. And these people go to church every Sunday. They dress up. They take pride in how they look. And yet when it turns around, as soon as they walk out of that church, it's like a completely different attitude and overwhelms them that they don't respond to that. I mean, look at the rate of illegitimacy in the black family. I mean, my best recollection as far as statistics, if you go back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s, illegitimacy in the black family was under 1%.
Right.
And today we're talking 75%.
Well, let me speak to the churches, because I have a very big problem with the black church. Number one, I think that when you walk into a black church today, they're pretty much going to say what you want them to say. They don't want to say anything that might be perceived as being offensive, because what they seem to be preoccupied with, in my opinion, is the money, the tithes and offerings. And if people come in on Sunday and you're speaking to their shortcomings, it's a good chance they're not going to come back next Sunday. So we have to start by being real with ourselves. And we have to speak to the problem regardless of what might happen, you know, as a consequence of doing it, or we're never going to get right.
Is this why we have the Reverend Wrights of this world? Is this why we have this black theology that they—
This black liberation theology, and it caters to what they want to believe. It has nothing to do with facts, you know, and they're going to tell the people what the people want to hear. And they're really emotional pimps, is what I call them, because they come in and they play to their emotions and they tell the members what they want to hear and get them excited because they know they'll give and they'll come back next Sunday.
You know, that brings me around. I have one of my many theories that I have lots of, and I call it the Tyler Perry moment. I love his movies. You know, you walk into a Tyler Perry movie, Madeira, let me tell you something. If you're not going to get straightened out by Madeira, you can't get straightened out. You're shot. But, I mean, if you look at the movies, you look at the value structure that is preached there, the discipline, even though she's the rules the roost, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Man, I tell you what, I don't understand it. How can they, in one instance, walk in and because of these movies, and they're very popular in the black community. I mean, the blacks go to them like it's going out of style. Mm-hmm. And they see all of these good things. They see the values. They see the properness of relationships. And yet they turn right around and do it. What is it, a 180 when they walk out of theater, just like they do a 180 when they walk out of church?
Well, first of all, I have a problem with the Tyler Perry movies.
Uh-oh.
And I'm going to tell you why. Because when you look at the Tyler Perry movie, it's a woman that's pretty much heading everything up. I have a problem with that. It should be a man at the head of everything that's heading everything up. So, you know, in a Tyler Perry movie, you know, many times it's Madea that's pulling everything together.
So,
and I think that's a job that traditionally was the role of a man. That should be a grandfather, not a grandmother.
Well, we ran the dads out. So Madeira's left with no— well, she has
exactly.
A husband, but he's kind of laid back. That's another role, so to speak. But we have a situation here where the dads have been run out. How do we bring the fathers back into the family?
You know, that's a very good question. And one thing I think that the radical feminist movement has helped contribute to running the fathers out. I think that political correctness, if you will, has helped run the fathers out. You know, really, I don't like the fact that many of these fathers are portrayed as fathers that don't want to have involvement in their children's lives, when actually that isn't the case. But there's a thing within the black community to where many of the black women have become radical, and they had this opinion that I don't need a man, I can do it on my own.
Now, is that stemmed from the feminist movement that came along in the 1960s, like from the You've Come a Long Way, Baby?
Yeah, I would say that because, you know, it's just not a fact. Women do need a man, and man does need a woman.
Well, it's a marvelous dichotomy and relationship that really works when they're both working well together.
Well, it was designed and ordained by Christ.
Oh, gosh, you might say something here because, you know, we might be stuck with a Chick-fil-A moment here.
Well, that's okay because I went to Chick-fil-A and I supported Chick-fil-A, and I don't have a problem with Chick-fil-A moments, you know, because since we're on the subject, let's talk about homosexual marriage. You know, homosexuals want to force us to accept how they believe, yet we're not supposed to expect them to accept how we believe. And I'm perfectly fine with an individual that chooses to be a homosexual. I'm completely against gay bashing, anything like that, but I do not support gay marriage. I'm sorry, homosexual marriage. Under any circumstance, I can't support that. And just like a homosexual, I can't expect a homosexual to relate to or even be turned on by heterosexual things. Well, they shouldn't expect me to be turned on by or to be, you know, be wanting to support things that are homosexual. I have a very big problem with society today. They want to force that down our throats. And let me reiterate, you know, you have every right to choose your sexual preference. You have every right, but you don't have the right to force it down our throats. And that's where I have my problem.
Now, do you think in conjunction with that, that's one of the things one of the dynamics that's going on in the black family, that the males are being emaciated, as you know, tie that into to the feminist movement, then connect it on to the government and its programs that are supposedly assisting and helping and making things better, that are throwing the men out of the house?
The male is being weakened. He's also being dumbed down. If you watch sitcoms today, who's always the doofus? It's the father. It's the doofus. And who steps in and saves the day? It's the mother. And she makes the father look like an idiot because she had to come in and clean up his mess. And, you know. And
now, was that also in the, you know, when they had the fellow that just died was a family, there was a spinoff of the a family with that lived in the projects?
And Sherman Helmsley.
Yeah, Sherman Helmsley.
Yeah.
I remembered that he used to put his foot down.
Well,
even though he was kind of in some regards, you know, he kind of acquiesced to his wife, but he would eventually put his foot down.
Well, you know, the liberals would have it that men bow down to women. I'm just going to say what it is. And I don't believe in that. I believe that the man is going to put his best foot forward and draw a line.
I keep being drawn back to this thing with the churches then, because you think if you take a look at theology, especially within the black community, where basically they're Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that I know is that the leadership role is there. That's what's taught. That's what's biblical. That's what should be permeating it. And yet we don't have that happening.
Well, in many of the churches, it's the women that are in control, believe it or not. In the black churches, it's the women that's running everything. And then you have the pastor, who's typically a man. And then what he does is he has to consider that, you know, majority of my members are women. So then he has to speak to them.
So is that what Reverend Wright is doing in his church?
Well, a lot of black pastors do. Reverend Wright is just simply a racist. I'm going to tell you what it is. He's a racist now. Well, and this isn't popular, what I'm telling you right now. I'm a black guy sitting here telling you that as a white guy, everybody's pointing to you, calling you a racist. I'd be pretty damn upset. Reverend Wright, in my opinion, he's going to say whatever he needs to say to get an emotional response out of the people that's sitting out there in front of him.
To get those amens.
To get those amens. And there's an easy way to get those amens. You're going to sit there and you're going to tell these people something that they want to hear. You're going to tell them how great they are. You're going to tell them how superior they are. And that's racist. And he's saying that from a racial standpoint. And he's going to place blame for every problem in the black community on the white man. And, you know, I don't believe that.
Isn't that what Farrakhan does also?
Exactly. And yet and still you see, and he's an anti-Semite, and yet still you see Emmanuel working with him in Chicago.
Well, I have always wondered where that dynamic came from, because if you look at prison populations, you find one of the strongest and largest growth areas is in the face of the Islamic movement within mm-hmm. the prisons. They don't stay there forever. They come out of that system. Is that aspect of the black community increasing today, in that when a person that has had some problems or troubles with the law goes into prison, has some time spent there, and then is encultured with the Islamist movement, and the Islamist movement is definitely not feminist-oriented. They are right. Almost, to the extreme when it comes to being chauvinist. Is that the kind of a negative effect that's going to be coming into the community?
Well, let me say this. We're going to speak about the prison system. I mean, you take these guys, they find themselves within the prison system. They've been out here wilding out, so to speak, doing whatever they wanted to do. Nobody's never held them accountable. And then all of a sudden you have somebody like the Nation of Islam step up, and they teach them what it is to be a man, you know, and they teach them about responsibility and respect and things that they were never taught. So once they teach them those things, it's very easy for them to take those guys and run with them. Now, do I agree with the Nation of Islam? Not at all. But what the Nation of Islam is doing with these guys, we need the Christians to go into the church and do the same thing. Because the Nation of Islam, at the same time, is teaching them hatred.
Well, there's two distinct philosophies there. And on that note, I wish you success with your rules for conservatives. Let's change it just a smidgen here. You know, when you think about the demographics of voting, one sees that from the 1988 to the 2008 elections, the percentage of voters who were black rose from 9.8 to 12.2%, which is a significant growth as far as the number of people coming out to vote. Additionally, in the 2008 election, black voters provided then-Senator Obama with a 95% margin versus only 4% for Senator McCain. I got this from the Pew Research Center, so we should be in pretty good shape on those numbers. How do you think this margin will hold in the upcoming election in 2012 with Obama running on his second term?
To be honest, I don't know. I think about that every day. And I can't understand why black people continue to support the Democrat Party the way that we do. The black community is constantly reminded. They're constantly told, the lie is constantly perpetuated that the Republicans are for rich people and that they're racist. They're told this in spite of the history of the Republican Party, which is the Republican Party that worked to free blacks from slavery. It's a Republican Party that pushed forward the dissolving the Jim Crow era. It was the Bull Connor and the Democrats that were hosing blacks and sticking dogs on them. And in spite of those facts, black people continue to support the Democrat Party.
The question for you then, if you are talking with a black person and you're getting in one of these discussions, how do they answer when you tell them, well, look, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 would not have been passed but for Republicans, and that the group that was tried to prevent that legislation was the Southern Democrats.
And Kennedy.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, let me tell you,
How do they drive that logic?
I'm going to go towards rules for conservatives and some of the things that I cover in the book. Now, I have numerous friends that did not agree with my politics. I was referred to as Uncle Tom, and my conservative Tea Party friends were racist, and they didn't want to hear anything that I had to say. And so I would appeal to them, and I'd say, okay, would you at least give me some time alone? Take the opportunity to talk to me one-on-one, nobody else around, and I want to present you with some information. And you take this information and you do your own research and you draw your own conclusion. Then you come back to me and you tell me what you came up with. 100% of the time, 100% of the time, they came back and they turned away from Obama. They turned away from the Democrats. I even had a few individuals say to me, said, hey, look, we're going to vote for the conservatives, the Republicans, the Tea Party people in the midterm, but you can't, by any means, you can't tell anybody that we're doing this, literally. And I'm telling you, and that's what motivated me to say, you know, I need to put a pamphlet together. And this pamphlet needs to do the same thing that I'm doing with these people on a one-on-one basis. Because 100% of the time, they turn with my youngest brother. He was arguing with me during Thanksgiving, well, how could you be against Obama and so on and so forth? And he got a little belligerent, and then I said, look, this is what I'm going to do. I said, I'm going to explain a few things to you. I'm going to tell you a few things, and I want you to go back and you begin to do your own research. You look into who Obama is. You look into who Bill Ayers is. You look into who Khalidi is. You look into all these people, Frank Marshall Davis, that played a role in his life. And then you come back and you tell me what's going on. And he came back completely converted. And he said, I cannot believe. He was kind of embarrassed. Everybody's embarrassed. He said, we can't believe that we've been this foolish this long. And really, the Democrats, all they did was come out and just continually say, Republicans are racist. Republicans are only for the rich. Well, they never had anything to substantiate that. They just knew that if they repeated it enough, people would begin to believe it.
Well, that
without
is
doing
mantra.
Any type of research or due diligence.
Well, that is the mantra. We say it often enough, they're going to believe you.
Exactly.
Let's kind of put this into perspective, put it back together, back to the Tea Party. The book will help, and I truly believe, or the pamphlet will help, because of the way that, you know, when those of us, and when we do speak to people of color, there is a desire, I know from the ones that I know, that really do want to understand their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But again, can you think of anything else that the Tea Party can use, or can, as individuals, as Americans, that we can use when we talk to? I mean, it saddens me today that we have a whole segment of our population that is so negative on our American way of life, which is the free enterprise, the capitalist system. That system, which is, you know, draws people from foreign countries to come to the United States. And yet I use the example of, you know, you walk into the black community and what do you see on a summer day, and you see guys standing around doing nothing. You walk in, who owns the property? They don't own the property. You walk into a store, who owns the store, the business? It's other foreign nationals, especially a lot of foreign nationals own that. Is it because of the money that is providing that level of subsistence that has created this mess that we're in? If you want to put a finger on anything, that would say would be the causation as far as why this situation has happened, it's because of that money and the support system that the government is doing, keeping people able to survive and function at a fairly reasonable, well-to-do level, but not without working.
Well, there's a message that I think is perpetuated throughout the black community by blacks. And that is that the black community, if you're in the black community, let me tell you what you hear all day in the black community. I'm going to be quite frank. You're constantly told that you're not responsible for the situation that you're in. You're constantly told that this guy over here is responsible for that, and look at what he has. And you're told that, well, you know, you deserve that. First of all, let me say, nobody deserves anything. And you're constantly told that there's a system that's been put in place to make sure that you don't succeed. You're told this on a regular basis. And you're reminded that this white guy put that system in place to keep you from succeeding. And you're told this day after day after day after day. Now, what do you think is going to happen? Because they're sitting there and they're believing that they're entitled because he has this and this should be mine, you know? And if you're constantly told that, you're going to begin to sit around and say, well, I've already done what I needed to do to get it. I just need to tell him to give it to me. So you're not going to do anything. So I believe that my message will ultimately wake black people up and save them from going off of this cliff.
Alan, I just want to say thank you for being so frank and honest. And thank you for coming on my show today. I would also like to point out that any American citizen is welcome to come on a future episode of America Speaks Out and express their own opinions and ideas about today's topics. The FlyPod Network is a neutral forum. So regardless of your point of view or your political affiliation, it makes no difference to us. Contact us by email right here in the studio if you'd like to come on the show. shout@theflypod.com. Well, that's my show for today from Studio 7. I'm your host, Alex Parnuk, coming to you free and clear through the New Media Network program feeds of www.theflypod.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.